For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
hey, man.
We are in Gwinnett today, guys, for the Paint Gwinnett Pink 5K packet pickup as people are getting their packets to get ready for Saturday. And we just had a great interview with Jen Griffin, Mike. She has been in charge of this event. And if you want to go back and listen, it's online at odyssey.com. But she explains everything and what's going down. But that's why we're out here today.
It's breast cancer awareness. Well, you see players in pro sports wearing pink trim on their duds.
No doubt. All right. Coming up, by the way, we're going to talk to our buddy from Denver, Benjamin Albright. He covers the NFL. By the way, they are on tonight.
Hey.
Listen, Saints are banged up.
Really, man. You've got a receiver who just got knocked out for the season. You've got another one who's knocked out with a concussion. So, yeah, they're missing some pieces. And they've also got a young quarterback in Spencer Rattler going up against Bo Nix. And, you know, this to me, Carl, with Denver's defense, the way they get after it, I like Denver in this game. I'm not sure I want to bet it just yet, but I've got Denver's defense on my fantasy team, hoping for some serious points tonight.
I totally agree with you on that. The 5 o'clock hour is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, where it's Boneless Thursday. Buy one, get one boneless wing, guys, with Buffalo Wild Wings. And Mike and I are going to be out at Buffalo Wild Wings perimeter location on Monday, inviting you to come out and hang out with us. Listen, we're not normally out on Mondays, but we love Buffalo Wild Wings so much, we're like, yeah, we want to be there, and we are going to be there with plenty of giveaways, Mike, and also a bunch of our own personalities from the radio station going to be hanging out with us as well.
Yeah, man. Coach's show will be on at 6. We'll be hanging out, milling, and hanging around the bar,
right,
too, man. Looking forward to it.
All right, guys. I told you Bijan Robinson was talking about this offense, and we're going to dive into this a little bit more later as we continue on. But I want you to hear what he had to say about the offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, because, again, last week we ran the ball. Are we going to come out this week and attempt to do the same thing? Week to week, the game plan is going to be different. But Bijan is lacking the creativity.
Yeah, I mean, I embrace it a lot. You know, I think it's really good that, you know, Zach is just such a creative, and he's always looking for new things. He's always looking to do new things. He's always looking to, you know, create situations, not just for me, but for everybody on the offense. And I really appreciate him for, like, asking questions to us, like, do you like this, or like, do you think we should do it? And obviously, like, if it's not good enough in practice, we're not going to run in the game. And that's why I appreciate him a lot. But
collaborative effort. I mean, something we talked about with Arthur Smith, and I always ask your feedback, and he'd always be like, 17-minute answer, which I always got the impression was no. But we've heard about and we've talked about, one of our listeners was just here, by the way, talking about, you know, the way the offense has evolved.
Yeah.
And Zach being more comfortable and getting the feedback from Bijan. And Bijan and Tyler Allgeier having their most complete game, in the running backs both getting in the end zone. Bijan, I know that's one. Remember, that was one of the things on our checklist. Bijan in the red zone, touchdowns. Well, check.
Twice. And Mike, here's the other thing. I mean, when we talk about Bijan and the collaboration, I don't want to run plays that guys don't want to run. Like, seriously. Like, if you don't think it's gonna work.
Or plays to your strengths.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's always room for improvement, but if it's something I just don't do, don't ask me to do it.
Correct. I think that's great, the way that he's handling that. Now, the other part of this conversation, and we're going to talk more about this, is the offense is fine, guys, but at what point does the pass rush hurt us? What point does it come back to bite us? We're winning despite the fact we're not getting after the quarterback the way we thought we would.
Everything that we've done so far has gotten better as the season has evolved, but the pass rush is still just not there. Yeah, holding teams to field goals. Michael Penix Jr. being the super secret agent spy who knows what this team does because he just played for the offensive coordinator. We'll talk more about that this hour.
All right, let's talk to our man Benjamin Albright. He covers the NFL. He works at KOA in Denver, but has been around for a very long time. And Benjamin, it's always good to have you back on. Let's start real quick with this Thursday night game. We said the Saints are banged up. What should we expect to see from Bo Nix and company tonight?
Well, traditionally, this offense has been a slow starter, so I think you're not going to see the opposite of fireworks early. It's an offense that gets going a little bit later. You know, you were talking right before I jumped on. I'll answer your question. You were talking right before you jumped on about needing some pass rushers, and I tell you what, man, we got an extra one. We got an odd man out here. Could I interest you in one for maybe a lightly used Kyle Pitts if you want to pass that up the rungs? We could use some of that on the offensive side because our tight end room is non-existent right now. We got Greg Dulcich, who's a healthy scratch. We got Adam Troutman, who's like watching paint dry when he's out there. It's slower than molasses in January. And then you got Lucas Kroll, who couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. So the tight end room isn't doing anything. You got the wide receiver room over here who gets open vertically. Bo doesn't see him. So they throw the ball around the line of scrimmage all the time, and that goes nowhere. And you got an offensive line that's a little banged up. So the offensive side of the ball ain't great. Defense, I mean, the Broncos are pretty good defensively. They got a top-5 defense. They're getting after the quarterback, one of the top sack pressure teams. They blitz an absurd rate, something like 40%. But without Pets or Tan, that may change things a little bit. You know, I mean, he's a matchup nightmare. He's really helped them to hold things up in the secondary, and so that may change a little in this game.
Look, I would trade you Kyle Pitts for Nick Benito, but you're not going to send Benito to us because he's doing his job.
We might. Can I interest you in a Baron Browning, a lightly used Baron Browning?
But you have to. I need a sweetener on this deal. I'll have to throw in some draft picks or something. But yeah, Pitts.
We can work all that. You have your people call my people. We'll make that work.
Here we are. We're wheeling and dealing with our man Albright from Denver. Yeah, man. And Pitts, by the way, he's getting, as you heard our conversation coming on the air, he's getting more involved in the offense. So that's kind of rounding out nicely. We are, though, we're missing a piece. Do you think there will be some traction with Max Crosby or the Raiders? No way coming off Max Crosby. And what's going to happen with Hassan Redd?
Well, I'll say this. There's no way you're trading what it would take to get Max Crosby. I mean, the Raiders there are absurd in their demands. You're talking about like 3 first rounders, things like you're not going to do that. Nobody's going to do that. So I think Max Crosby probably winds up a Raider for life unless he forces his way out of there. As far as Hassan Reddick goes, now there you might have some possibility. That's one of those ones that I think everybody just kind of wants to wash their hands of the thing at this point, get it done. The only sort of downside there is what is he exactly? What is his love for football at this point? Does he really have that? What is this sort of mercurial holdout with the Jets sort of been all about? I think he'd be a great fit down there. The question is, does he love football at this point?
I don't want that juju in my locker room.
I said this to Mike earlier.
Yeah, you're right.
About this, and this is what is not being heard around the country. And Benjamin, you're on it because I think, you know, this is part of, do I want any part of that coming to my organization and having to deal with that? Because, by the way, whoever trades for him, there will be pressure for him to deliver. And if that GM, if it ends up being a bad deal, that GM's going to catch hell. So I'm very skeptical about the whole Hassan.
And that's why maybe Rosenhaus is trying to say, look, pal, your best options are here.
Yes,
right?
Yes, no doubt about it.
There's a second component to that because if they trade him into the NFC, the deal with the Eagles accelerates the pick automatically to a second rounder going back to the Eagles. So the Jets may be reticent to trade him in the NFC.
Yeah. Hey, Benjamin Albright from KOA, NFL insider with us here on the WaitFor.com hotline. Do you have any idea what the Dolphins are going to do or what, more importantly, what is Tua Tagovailoa going to do?
Well, I mean, Tua should retire. I mean, let's be honest here. I struggle to believe that there's going to be a sane doctor on this planet that's going to sign off on him coming back this season, let alone ever. These concussions are a serious thing. I hope that he's able to have a meaningful life. I hope that, you know, if some miracle he's allowed to play again, I hope he's successful and all that kind of stuff. I'm not rooting against him. I'm just saying somebody's got to get in his ear for the better part of sense here. As far as the Dolphins go, they certainly have had scouts out here at Colorado for several games now, so they've been keeping an eye on the Shedeur Sanders thing for sure. I think they're kind of in the tank this season. I think they're writing this season off and looking for the future.
Yeah. By the way, Shedeur, number one overall pick. What's your take on him?
Man, I don't know about that. There's a couple of players I think I'd take before this draft. It's interesting because this draft is really 15 players. Like there's like 12 to 15 top end players, and then it's really kind of a muddled middle. It's not a really, it's not a high end draft. It's more of a mid round draft this year. So I would take Travis Hunter before I take Shadur, but the premium on quarterbacks kind of drives these quarterbacks up a little bit. He's got some issues. He needs the right city too. Like there's some places he's not going to go. You know, you don't want him in like a heartland city. You want him on the coast. You want him in a Miami.
Yeah.
You know, you want him somewhere like that. He needs that kind of environment, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, right. Prime time. We were just talking about how these bizarrely way too early mock drafts are already starting. Carson Beck, I mean, are scouts just going to fall in love with him the way they fall in love with bad North Carolina quarterbacks? Or does he have to do something against Texas? Or his brand is already strong. He's going to be a top 10 guy no matter what.
Well, his brand's already strong, I'll tell you that. But and he's got the tools. I think part of it, he's sort of Sam Darnoldy in the way that, like, you know, one half of football, they'll show you something that you're like, well, what was that? And then the next half of football, you're like, oh, I see it now. And so there's sort of a little bit of that to his game. If he can find consistency over the rest of the season, I think that's the big thing for him. Everything's there. I mean, he doesn't have an elite arm, but it's good. He's got a great knowledge of pro passing concepts, things like that. He'll be a first rounder any which way you slice it. The question is where, and he just needs to develop more consistency.
We are talking with Benjamin Albright, guys, NFL insider, as we kind of go around the league. Falcons getting ready for their matchup against Seattle on Sunday. A big matchup, obviously, is going to be Sunday night. Steelers taking on the Jets. We know the changes the Jets have made. Benjamin, two-part question. One, do you think the addition of Davante Adams, what's it do for that offense that's had so many issues? And then two, when you're talking about the Steelers, what the hell is Mike Tomlin doing? We've been talking about this today. Yeah. Why create a controversy when you don't need one? You saw Russ in Denver. Tell us what we're missing here.
Well, let's go back to the first question first. Let's start with the Jets. Do I think adding Davante Adams is a good thing? Sure. But it's also like adding a radio to a boat with a hole in it. It's not the problem. You know, the problem with the Jets isn't the receivers. I understand the Mike Williams thing and all that, but that's not the problem. The problem is they get run on and they get too many penalties. And adding a wide receiver doesn't solve either one of those. So, I think they were premature in firing Saleh. I think they've got to get the penalties cleaned up, first of all, and the rest of it will take care of itself. But it's like adding luxury gold finishes, like I said, to a boat with a hole in it. You didn't patch the boat, but it sure looks pretty. So we'll see how that works out for them. As far as the Steelers go, I know some people on that staff. Russ was always going to be the starter until the calf injuries flared up. So that was always the plan. Now, with Justin out there, and they've won a few games, but apparently there's some internal discussion there because the offensive coordinator wants to stick with Fields, but just about everybody else wants to pivot. And a large portion of that is they think they're winning in spite of Justin Fields. I thought Fields has shown a few things here or there. I didn't think he's done quite enough to get benched. But at the same time, I mean, you throw Russ out there, you'll figure it out real quick. One of the two is going to be the guy, and they're trying to figure out who's going to be the guy as far as the stuff goes anyway. So you got enough of an exposure with Fields. You can always put him back in, this isn't a situation with a rookie where you yank him early, you undermine his confidence. Fields been around the block a little bit. He kind of knows. And I love what he said today in his interview or presser, whatever it was, in the locker room, where he said, hey, look, I didn't play well enough to keep the job. If I had, we wouldn't be having the discussion. I love that about him. I've never been his biggest fan, but man, I love that dude.
It is a hell of a story, and you're right, man. By the way, as we're talking with Benjamin Albright about those, about it, I just don't understand how Nathaniel Hackett got the job. You got to see him up close and personal. What a train wreck in Denver. Basically, to a national audience, you saw in his first game that he was in over his head. Was it just simply that he's literally Aaron Rodgers' valet, and that's how that whole thing transpired? And what is that relationship like now with Aaron Rodgers and the new OC?
Yeah, valet might be a little strong, more like coffee getter.
Coffee getter.
Hackett, man, that was... I'll say this. Look, Nate, everybody around the league loves Nate Hackett. They love Nate Hackett, the person. I remember when he got hired and I was asking about it down at the Senior Bowl and just kind of polling people about him a little bit. And everybody's, oh, I love it. Nate got a job. He's a good dude. He's a good. And then finally I'd ask the question, well, can he coach? And it would be a lot of him and hawing right after that, And so that kind of tipped me off early. Then, and I will never forget this as long as I live. We get to training camp. It's a third day camp. They're getting out there, they're doing some stuff at 7-on-7s, and he just walks up to me, and he's like, you want to run around? And I think that was the moment where I was like, this is not serious. This is not what we're doing here. It's not serious. You've got a journalist. You're asking if a journalist wants to butt in on 7s, dude. Like, what are we doing here?
Oh my
the card that followed was not surprising.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like and thought,
damn, Gina,
thought that Robert Saleh, that hire was strictly, we're talking about the Jets now. That was at Denver where Benjamin's talking about. But the Saleh hire was strictly to get Aaron Rodgers, period. That's it. And
well, the Hackett
that
part,
has
yeah.
played itself. Yes, the Hackett part has played itself out. The Saleh hiring Hackett was just a familiarity, you know, convenience. Tough as always. Denver win tonight?
Man, it's going to be tough. I don't know. I think I'm leaning New Orleans in this one. I'd love for Denver to pull it out, but I'm leaning New Orleans.
Oh, snap.
Okay.
Right. That answers that question.
Benjamin Albright, NFL Insider.
Bet the under.
Thanks, my man. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
Yep, take the under. It's a lock. Bye, fellas.
He's right about that. Yeah. Both of these offenses are not good right now. Remember, the Saints scored like 75 points in the first two games, and everybody's like, ooh!
And then womp, womp, and again, missing their two best wide receivers.
All right, coming up, we got more NFL talk. We go behind enemy lines. Michael Sean Duggar from The Athletic, who covers Seattle.
The Strong Arm Story of the Day is brought to you by John Foyt Associates Personal Injury Law.
Let's go behind enemy lines and talk with Michael Sean Duggar. He writes for The Athletic, covers the Seattle Seahawks. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And, Michael, here's the deal. I'm looking at the Seahawks numbers, right? Geno's throwing the team for almost 300 yards a game, 296. We saw our quarterback throw for 500 yards, which was great just a couple of weeks ago. But Geno leads the league in passing. Tell me about this offense and what's the deal here? Because this is something I don't think a lot of people expected with Seattle and Geno Smith.
Yeah. First off, thanks for having me. Last name pronounced Duggar, by the way.
Yes, Duggar.
Before we start.
Yep.
I think you said not many people expected it. You know, I did. You know, I live in Seattle, obviously. You know, I watched a lot of the University of Washington and that offense quarterbacked by Michael Penix. And I saw how often they were slinging it. And I figured if they hired the offensive coordinator from that University of Washington team, Ryan Grubb, which they did, that they would probably come out throwing the ball quite a bit. You know, not to say Ryan Grubb cares nothing about the run game, but, you know, you hire a Pac-12 coordinator, you know, sometimes that's what you get to start. You know, a coordinator who also has never coached in the NFL before, you know, so it's not like he dipped to college and came back. You know, this is his first time being an NFL coach, and that just comes with some growing pains. Seattle has played from behind quite a bit, so what's influencing some of the drop-back numbers and pass attempt numbers and things like that. But even when if you take out some of their two-minute drills and some of the times they've had to just throw a lot because they're down two scores or whatever, they're still one of the most pass-happy teams in the league, and I think that's a direct reflection of the coach's philosophy in terms of getting out of trouble. You know, you learn a lot about a coordinator on, like, second and eight. You know what I mean? Like, does he trust that run again to get you to third and manageable, or does he throw a bubble screen, you know, something that's quote-unquote right. an extension of the run, or does he just throw a couple stick routes, a little curl flat, you know, get 4 yards from the tight end, you know, instead of trusting the running back to get you four, get you five on second and eight or second and nine after you've already run it for nothing, you know. And so far, Grubbs, you know, kind of his instinct when it's second and nine, second and ten, second and eight, all right, let's throw it again, you know. And that's nothing wrong with that per se, but you see that with a lot of guys who come from college. That's what college looks like right now. It's a lot of shotgun runs. It's a lot of bubble screens. It's a lot of throwing as an extension of the run game. And sometimes it takes a little bit for some college guys to adjust to that, which maybe we'll see if he does on Sunday.
Yeah, we were joking around about Michael Penix Jr. He'll be the sleeper agent, the inside man. Who knows what some of those wrinkles may look like, and he was obviously the scout team QB this week for the Falcons. Michael, what about stopping the run? If you look at the numbers, we give up a lot of rushing yards. We're having a hard time stopping the run, and you guys are 2 yards per game worse than we are. Do you think that Seahawks will have a hard time stopping our run game, which was really gotten tight?
Yeah, you know, I think it helps that they're getting Byron Murphy, the second back, the rookie first-round pick, 16th overall. He's been missing the last three games, and their run defense has been bad the last three games. I won't call it a direct correlation because he's just one guy of 11 on the field, but I do think he'll help quite a bit because the Seahawks have really good front-line defenders on their starting lineup. But, you know, when you bring in the reserves, it's almost like a baseball team, you know, bad relievers. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you can just get bad there in the sixth and seventh or whatever when you got to pull your guy. So that's kind of what the Seahawks have been. And Rendy, when they've had to get, you know, a drive that's 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 plays, well, now you're asking the backups to come in a little bit and they're just getting gashed. I think that's a problem up front that maybe won't continue this week. But one of the things that's also been happening, explosive runs are usually a product of your guys at the second level doing something wrong, missing a tackle, missing a gap, blowing an assignment, taking a poor angle. You know, all of that has been happening the last 3 weeks. And the Seahawks are really staying in their secondary right now. They just put cornerback Artie Burns on IR with a toe injury. They just put safety Rashawn Jenkins on IR with a hand injury. They might not have cornerback Trey Brown with a foot injury or cornerback Reek Woolen with an ankle injury. Damn near everybody we know by name, you know, with the exception of Julian Love and Devin Witherspoon. So it's really going to be incumbent on those guys to just do the simple stuff that, that run defense requires. It's being in the gap, taking the right angles, and then getting the guy on the ground. You know, Atlanta's been bad at that. The Seahawks have been bad at that. I don't know how confident Seattle fans may be in the run defense being better when the back end is so banged up. But I do think, because for me, run defense at that point eventually becomes just pride. Like, do you want to get off that block? Do you want to get that guy on the ground? Because if you want it bad enough, you will. So we're going to learn whether Seattle's reserves and, of course, their starters really just want it bad enough to make it a point to stop the run on Sunday.
How do they get their way out of this three-game losing streak? What have we learned about Mike McDaniel, or McDonald, that is, coming over? I thought early on, you know, the defense kind of took on his attitude, but these injuries you're talking about, I mean, you can only overcome so many of these injuries. Talk about what you know about the head coach and how he's approaching this.
Yeah, he's a really process over results guy. So even when they won their first three games and the defense was playing well, you know, he was seeing things that he knew, like, hey, if we don't clean this up, it could get spooky. You know, those are my words, not his, but you could just tell he was seeing the same things. They were really bad at play action coverage. They were just playing really bad quarterbacks to start the year, so they couldn't exploit it. And then, you know, they played Jared Goff in week four, play action king, pretty much. And they get gashed. You know, Brock Purdy is the best play action quarterback in the league statistically. Gashed him. Right? Even Daniel Jones is not, like, super bad at it. You know, gashed him. You know, so that was something that they were bad at for the first 3 weeks, even though they were playing well. It just, the quarterbacks couldn't take advantage. But, I mean, you know, offensive coordinators make a lot of money in this league, too. So that was something they had to clean up. And, obviously, the run defense fell apart for the reasons that I've mentioned. You know, so I'm not really sure how the defense gets better immediately until they get healthier. However, I am confident that the offense gets better, because I think their thing is really simple. Like, hey, this ain't the Big 12, hit the Pac-12 or whatever. You're going to have to balance it out and run the rock, like traditional runs, not bubble screens to be an extension of it. Like, give your O-lineman a break. You know, Geno's under a lot of duress, leads the league in dropbacks. Like, use Ken Walker, use Zach Charbonnet. And I think the usage of players is a very simple fix versus like a schematic issue or tackling or whatever. So I think the way they get out of this hole, to answer your question, is to be more balanced on offense, generate those explosives there, you know, use some of the other tools in the bag. Like I said, they do a lot of shotgun runs and pure dropbacks. They're last in play action rate, you know, like use more play action, use Ken Walker more. So I think that'll be the key to getting them out of this hole.
It's Michael Sean Dugar joining us, guys, our man in Seattle from The Athletic, previewing Seattle taking on the Falcons. So you think they maybe threw some new wrinkles in 10 days to get ready? Not many teams – we lose four in a row. We used to lose five and six in a row to Dan Quinn, but not a lot of teams lose four games in a row in the NFL. So a little bit of pressure on Seattle this week, is there?
Oh, it's a lot of pressure, you know. This game is kind of tucked away on a slate with all the other games starting at 1 p.m. Eastern, which is helpful for Seattle because they lost two of their three during this losing streak in primetime. As you guys know, that just amplifies things in either direction. You win on primetime, everyone's a hero. You lose on primetime, people need to lose their jobs. It's kind of the nature of the biz. So it's kind of nice for them if they can just get that pressure off in terms of just game start time, you know, because that does matter in the league. That's the reality. You lose four straight. You know, at some point, people just don't care about injuries. They don't care about how new your coach is or how new your coordinators are or who's in and who's out.
No.
You got to go win games, you know. So, yeah, there's a ton of pressure on them to avoid losing a fourth straight. In particular, the sequencing of this is important as well because they played three bad teams, three bad quarterbacks to start, beat up on them, played three semi-competent teams depending on how you felt about the Giants, and they lost. On top of that, they played three games in 11 days during this losing streak. So now they, as you just mentioned, they had some time off, which is huge. So now you can't make the sequencing excuse. Now it's like if you go down and lose to Atlanta, it's like, all right, now you got the time off. You didn't have to play a bunch of games in a row, and you still lost. So now what? You know, they'd be running out of excuses, so to speak, if they lost a fourth straight with so much time off in between this and the game against the Niners.
This 5 o'clock hour is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, where it's Boneless Thursday. Buy one, get one boneless wings, guys. It's Dukes and Bell. Mike, real quick before we get into some college football conversation, we're up here in Gwinnett. We've been talking about it all day. Jen Griffin stopped by, who helped us, you know, and certainly you and her connected many, many years ago. We've been supporting this event 9 years now?
Yeah, Jen is the director for Paint Gwinnett Pink here in Gwinnett, and Northside Hospital Group is involved. There's going to be a big 5K, guys, over at Cool Ray Field. That's why we're here every year. It's kind of fun. The first year they've done the packet pickup inside. So a lot of our listeners ran into a bunch of guys who know us. They go, what are you two doing under a tent out in the parking lot in front of the Gwinnett Medical Center Foundation? I go, well, the action's inside, which is out here. But it's been great seeing some old friends make some new friends. And again, even if you're not registered for the walk, the 5K or run, just come and support the folks. There's a lot of cool stuff going on early 8 a.m. at Cool Ray Field on Saturday, and I'll see you on stage.
All right. Sounds good. Let's talk some dogs because – we had Barbara Dooley on earlier, and she was reminiscing about...
She was in rare form.
Well, she was. she was reminiscing about the early 80s where that dog class, that senior class, had an amazing run. They won a national championship. They won three SEC championships. And, you know, the last time that Texas played, or should I say Georgia played at Texas, you're talking about the late 50s. And Mike, we were talking about the this game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll hear Kirby here in just a second talk about these two quarterbacks. I told you today I saw something and I was like, this is a stretch. And they were like, whoever plays better, it'll help their draft status in the spring. And I'm like, wait a minute. One game is going to define Carson Beck or Quinn Ewers?
Right, that's what I was joking around with our buddy Benjamin Albright. You know, earlier in the hour, I said, yeah, by that metric, no North Carolina quarterback should ever have been drafted. You know, whether it's Drake May or Mitchell Trubisky, based on whatever they did. I mean, GMs and scouts fall in love with the archetype. You know, they had the prototypical guy, the big, tall quarterback, the cannon for the arm, the dual threat guy that can do it all. You know, and then there's just guys who play in big games and win. Now, LSU didn't win the big one, but certainly Jaden Daniels played in enough big games without a defense and put it on his shoulders. That's why I loved him coming out of college. You and I said the same thing about Deshaun Watson over Mitchell Trubisky for the same reason. He played in big games.
He did.
You know, Baker Mayfield played in big games. There's guys that have a pedigree. But, you know, Carson Beck, and this guy's dog fans don't take it the wrong way, but, you know, Carson Beck has played in some big games, but he hasn't won the big games. Yes, he's won enough. He's got a great winning percentage, but the SEC championship last year, the Alabama rematch, this is a game where, for dog fans, I don't give a crap about NFL scouts, Carson Beck needs to be like letter perfect in this one.
Well, you asked me, you said, what is his signature win? And it's funny because if you ask that question about Stetson Bennett, there's a few of them.
We'll be talking for about a half an hour.
And, right. And because there were games with Stetson, and again, we're talking about it because those are the national championship years. But there were games with Stetson where you went, can he get it done? What's he going to do this week? And I remember us having these conversations on the show.
Even after he proved he could do it this next year, they were still asking the question.
And yeah, and so he'd come back and he'd play well, and he'd play well in those big games. I don't know. This could be that win for Carson where you go, okay, he needs this as much as the program right now to just kind of say, hey, you know what? We are as good as we think we are. I've said this all week, and guys, I'll repeat it. Pressure's on Texas, okay? Texas needs this win to verify them feeling like they have returned to prominence and that they can play
with arguably the best program in college football. It's just what it is. And, you know, at the end of the day, if this is close, which I think it will be, but Texas prevails, Mike, then I think you'll have a lot more people around the country saying, okay, this is a national championship team. If they don't, and Georgia goes in there and wins, I think you have a complete turnaround on what people think about Georgia right now, even being 5-1, where it's been a shaky 5-1. And Barbara said this, going back to Barbara Dooley, it's online at Odyssey.com. She said, maybe we were looking ahead a little bit with Miss State because we know how big this game was going to be this week.
Yeah, and look, I will say this. Malachi Stark spoke for a lot of Georgia fans when he said, we got to just do better. This isn't our standard.
It's not.
You know, and there are leaders on this team, and the injury report that dropped yesterday has Tate Ratledge upgraded to questionable, which would be huge for that offensive line.
They need him.
And we'll see if that goes down. You know, Roderick Robinson is still out. We know that Smile Mondon has been out. There was just it was a story which maybe people who didn't know he's out now know he's out for the game. But, you know, Mikel Williams, can he be a difference maker? Can he be that force multiplier? Just wreaking havoc and hopefully getting in that Texas backfield. And the other thing is, and we brought this at the end of the show yesterday for guys who missed it, big USA Today article. And it was, I mean, this thing, we were laughing how over the top this article was with graphics and interactive. You could punch up a date and see what the Georgia player was arrested for. I mean, it was a bit over the top, if I'm honest. And, of course, they decided to drop it the week of the biggest game in the college football season. But as one of my buddies, Alan, a retired naval aviator and pilot, said to me when I was walking the dog this morning, he goes, I heard you talking about you know, Georgia yesterday. He goes, USA Today, you know what people use that for at the airport? I go, what? When they're out of toilet paper. Mm. So that was his impression of who's reading USA Today or being swayed by a typical kind of hatchet piece with some old stuff rehashed that some of the stuff was off point. Doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things.
I don't think it does. I don't think it changes anybody's opinion necessarily for those who care and know what these stories were and what they are. But there is a segment of college football fans, Mike, with the spotlight being on this weekend, who don't know. And they'll read that for whatever reason, or they'll see it online. Because, again, he's right about the old days, but nobody reads a physical newspaper anymore. It's online. People are going to see that digitally, and it'll be out there. But, again, I don't think it has any effect. Kirby Smart, talking about Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers, he says he believes they're both very similar athletically. Mm. They're underrated. He thinks that these guys are really good players and that their experience is what's going to help both of them in this game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.